supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Call it a tale of two press conferences in Atlantic City today. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. One event was celebratory, the groundbreaking for a new development just 5 months after the state took over the gambling town. The other was critical of what the state takeover could mean for Atlantic City's future, as WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports.
I started my day on the boardwalk near South Albany Avenue. Politicians and business people were gathering to break ground on a new development project south of the casinos. A jazz band was playing, and it was a victory lap for some of the politicians intent on pulling Atlantic City out of financial ruin.
This project truly demonstrates that we've turned the corner in our commitment to revitalize Atlantic City.
That was Governor Chris Christie. The project he mentioned will house a new campus of Stockton University, as well as new headquarters of the South Jersey Gas Company. Christie said the project was a result of his administration's efforts, including the state takeover of Atlantic City.
This city is an extraordinary asset, both for our state and for the entire region. And it was neglected. It was neglected by lots of people.
But then I headed to another event, 2 miles up the beach at Atlantic City Hall, where the takeover also dominated discussion. Here, a coalition of groups was speaking out against the potential sale of the city's water utility, something that's been whispered about for months. The event attracted national figures like Cornell William Brooks, president of the NAACP.
Why is the NAACP here in Atlantic City? Why? Because we understand that water rights are civil rights, and civil rights are human rights.
Brooks and others worried that prices could go up and quality could go down if the state sells the Atlantic City Water Authority to a private company.
We are committed to ensuring a democratic solution to a democratic problem. That is to say, we have to hold on to our public resources. We have to hold on to our public assets. We have to hold on to our public workers. And yes, dear God, we have to serve the public.
New Jersey officials have not yet decided what to do with the Water Authority, but under the Atlantic City takeover law, they're free to privatize it as early as next month. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
With sea level rise threatening much of the East Coast, some Republicans in the region see climate change differently than members of the GOP who deny that it exists. WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo reports on some area Republicans who are quietly speaking out on the issue.
Most Republicans deny climate change exists, or at least that humans are driving it. Many say there's nothing you can do to combat sea level rise. New Jersey Congressman Leonard Lance disagrees with his party on the issue.
I believe climate change occurs, and I believe human beings are at least in part responsible for it.
There's a new group in the U.S. House called the Climate Solutions Caucus. It's made up of 13 Republicans and 13 Democrats who want to find any middle ground on combating climate change. 4 Philadelphia area representatives are on it. 3 of them are in the GOP. The Republican head of the group is Carlos Curbelo of Miami.
The bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus, I envision as being the ideas factory where we can work with our Democratic colleagues to find, at first, some modest policy proposals that can help.
You hear that term, modest? Even that's too much for infamous climate change-denying Oklahoma Republican Senator Jim Inhofe. The former head of the Energy Committee laughs off the new group.
Only 13 in the House?
Yeah, so far.
Oh my
they just
gosh.
Announced it.
I figure they could easily get a lot more than that.
And a lot of them are.
Some people are afraid of that issue. And so, you know, they don't believe it. They're just afraid of it.
So how does someone like Congressman Lance of New Jersey deal with members of his own party like that?
Try to discuss the issue calmly and rationally and reasonably with my colleagues. And I'm certainly willing to listen to their point of view.
While the bulk of Republicans in the West and Midwest brush aside fears over climate change and only want to discuss how fossil fuels are vital for their state's economies, for Lance, it's also an economic issue in a different way.
I believe that we want to make sure that we have a strong industry on the coasts of the United States, including the East Coast and within the East Coast, including the beautiful New Jersey beaches. Our shore region is one of the gems of the state, and tourism is a significant industry in New Jersey because of the New Jersey shore.
South Jersey Republican Tom MacArthur also bucks his party when it comes to climate skepticism.
I think that politicians shouldn't tell scientists that they don't know what they're talking about. So I think it's sort of dumb to pretend like the climate isn't changing. It is changing. We all know that.
But MacArthur says there's not a lot Congress can do to combat climate change.
So we need to pay attention to building standards, which that's a state issue, not a federal issue for the most part. But the state and local communities need to make sure they build carefully to protect people. And I think there are certainly some things that can be done to, as I said, to make sure we respond to the fact that the scientists make it clear that we're in a period of climate change.
But does MacArthur see a federal role in addressing it?
Yeah, there's a federal role. There has been a federal role. You know, where that role goes, as I said, for me, is always the balancing of let's be responsible stewards. Let's make sure, on the other hand, we don't get too far ahead of ourselves and destroy our own economy when other nations around the world maybe aren't doing as much as we are.
While walking into the Capitol, I caught up with Pennsylvania Republican Pat Meehan, a member of the new Climate Caucus. He represents parts of five counties west of Philadelphia. He says he's hoping to convince his skeptical colleagues to focus on cleaning up the environment, not to debate climate science.
Well, I hope we can appreciate science, first and foremost, as a recognized confirmation that we've got to be doing more together to try to address what will be an issue if left unaddressed, and the opportunity to work in a bipartisan fashion on things that we think we could do to make a cleaner environment for the next generation.
President Trump's initial budget blueprint calls for slashing the budget of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, which collects lots of key data tracking climate change. So one of the first tests for Climate Solution Caucus members will be to see if they can ensure the government will even be able to keep monitoring the issue. For WHYY News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Next month's Democratic primary has incumbent Philadelphia City Controller Alan Bukovitz seeking a fourth term as the city's elected financial watchdog. This time, he's defending his position from Rebecca Reinhart. She recently gained an endorsement from former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell. WHYY's Dave Davies spoke with Reinhart earlier this week.
Well, Rebecca Reinhart, welcome to Newsworks Tonight. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I grew up in Abington, went to Abington High School, and left Philadelphia area for many years for college and then grad school.
College at Middlebury, grad school?
College at Middlebury and then grad school at Columbia. I got my master's in public administration and ended up spending close to 10 years in New York. Where after I got my master's, I worked in the private sector. I worked for Fitch Ratings, one of the bond rating agencies, and then for Bear Stearns for several years. And it was really at after a few years working at Bear Stearns, I felt that I wanted to be on the other side of that, to actually help governments. So at Bear Stearns, I was working with municipal derivatives and complex financial arrangements with governments around the country. And I found that many governments didn't make the best financial decisions, and I really wanted to help government make better decisions. So I reached out towards the end of 2007 when Mayor Nutter got elected to see if he'd be interested in someone like me to come work at the city, and I became the city treasurer.
So you had a career doing stuff in New York and then 9 years as a senior level financial manager for the city.
Mm-hmm.
Why run for office now?
I felt and began to feel more strongly that to have an even greater impact on this city, I needed to be an elected leader. And when I looked at the role of city controller and really felt that I could help the city in that role in a much greater way than working from within an administration.
So what's the heart of your message? Why you?
So I'm the most qualified candidate with 15 years of financial experience. If elected city controller, that at a minimum, I could find $10 million a year. And that's a real minimum of both waste, but also inefficiencies. There's so much opportunity for modernization. And I think the city controller can play a much bigger role in that. And I think that if we drive the annual audits, which aren't being done each year now, but they're required by law, and if we do that with a focus on modernization and best practices, we can save $10 million a year. And that's money that can go towards schools, parks, rec centers.
If there's that much waste and inefficiency mm-hmm. in government, why couldn't you fix it as budget director? Why mm-hmm. is this a better role?
Well, as budget director, I was responsible for setting the spending levels, not responsible for managing the overall city. As chief administrative officer for Mayor Kenney, I was responsible for 11 departments and functions, which is about 1,000 employees. 1,000 out of 25,000 employees is about 4% of the city. So in the area that I had responsibility for, I spent a lot of time over in that year for Mayor Kenney working on modernizing procurement, purchasing function. That can sound really boring, but actually there was so much room to modernize. And when I got there in January 2016, all of the city's competitive bidding was done by paper. So if you're a company and you want to bid on selling pencils to the city, that would be all done by paper reams. So we moved to an e-procurement system and we started something called reverse auction bidding. Those things alone saved a few million dollars. The way I view the city controller's position is it's the audit function over the entire city as well as the school district. So the power is much greater in that role than what I had overseeing that 4% of the city for Mayor Kenney.
And what is reverse? What is it? Reverse auction bidding? Is that what you said?
Yes. It's reverse auction bidding. It's like the reverse of eBay. So the city governments, what they can do is say if we want to I'll use the pencil example again. City wants to buy pens or pencils. Bidder A will, it's all electronic, and bidder A will say, I'll sell it to you for X price. Bidder B can say, you know what, I'll sell it to you for less. And there's actually transparency in those prices, and it drives the prices down.
So that's happening now in procurement and money's being saved.
Yeah, that started. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you did.
Yes, absolutely.
You've made a point that Alan Butkovich, the incumbent, mm-hmm. is a lifelong politician, part mm-hmm. of the Democratic organization. Why is that an issue?
I think it matters because I think it prevents him from taking tough stances against those that are part of that party political establishment. He's beholden to that machine, and there are things that aren't looked at and aren't challenged. And I saw that from working within the city over the 9 years, because he's part of the same system. And really, we need an independent city controller, a city controller that's not beholden to the machine. And that's the voice that I want to bring to the city.
Rebecca Reinhart, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. So appreciate it. Thank you.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies speaking with Rebecca Reinhart, Democratic candidate for Philadelphia City Controller. You can hear more of their conversation, as well as Dave's interview with incumbent Alan Butkovich at newsworks.org. Philadelphia has a new task force to review historic preservation laws. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that the modernization effort has been in the works for a while, though it comes in response to the loss of some historic properties.
Mayor Jim Kenney says it's been more than three decades since historic preservation regulations have been reviewed. He says over the years, developers have changed historic properties in ways he wished he could have stopped.
There was a building in the Queen Village area that was an old synagogue. And it was taken over by a new owner. And the new owner proceeded to jackhammer the Star of David off the building. And I was freaking out because it was as an outrage. And I was told that we had no authority because the building was not on our preservation list.
Harris Steinberg of the Lindy Institute at Drexel University will chair the task force. He's excited by the opportunity to update the antique regulations.
I think this is a watershed moment for Philadelphia in terms of preservation. The development pressures that we've seen, which suggest growth for the first time in over half a century, really are kind of forcing us to take seriously how we manage and balance kind of growth and preservation.
The National Trust for Historic Preservation will also be assisting the task force. Siri Warden of the group says Philadelphia isn't the first city that has asked for help.
The opportunities that exist in Philadelphia's historic neighborhoods align well with our expertise. We have 7 decades of experience helping cities, including Louisville, Detroit, Miami, among others, design supportive policies, create funding tools, and build community support for the reuse of older and historic buildings.
The William Penn Foundation, a WHYY supporter, is also assisting with funding for the project. The city is adding 2 staffers to the Historical Commission starting July 1st and paying them through higher permitting fees. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Imagine you were able to get a job without sending in a resume, sitting down for an interview, or even getting a background check. The only thing you'd have to do is say you want a job. Grayston Bakery out of Yonkers, New York, has been hiring employees that way for more than 30 years. The company has trademarked its so-called open hiring policy, and it's encouraging others to join them and help the millions of Americans with criminal records find work. WHYY's Katie Culinary sat down with CEO Mike Brady and Supervisor of Training Dion Drew. They're visiting Philadelphia this week for a conference on conscious capitalism.
Mike Brady, Dion Drew, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So, Mike, where did the idea of open hiring come from?
Open hiring has been around for 30 years. It was developed by our founder, Bernie Glassman, who was a Buddhist monk, and he wanted to start a business that both made money, but also gave back to the community. And so open hiring is a model where we give anyone an opportunity that comes to the front door of our bakery. They put their name on a list, and then when we have a job available, we bring people off the list, first come, first serve.
And do they have to do anything? Like, what's the process?
They come through the door, and then they attend an orientation class. And so the orientation program explains everything there is to do at the bakery to be effective. And then if they do that, they keep their job. If not, we ask them to leave.
So, Dion, tell us about the day you got the call from Grayston Bakery.
I was incarcerated for 4 years. I decided things wasn't right in my life, so I set some goals. And when I came home, I immediately tried to put them in action, but nobody would hire me. I got that call from Grayston asking me, do I want to work that night? And I said, hell yeah, excuse my language, but that's what I said. I started February 2nd, 2009. I've been there 8 years, 3 or 4 promotions.
What impact has that had on your life, being able to have this job?
I started my own family. I have 3 bank accounts. I have all types of insurance, life insurance, dental, health insurance. I have a beautiful 6-year-old daughter. And the impact is just crazy.
What kinds of things do you train people to do?
You got to show them the work, but I really deal with life, how to get to work on time, getting up, taking orders from other people. That's what I try to deal with more, life skills.
Every day you guys make like 35,000 pounds of brownies, enough to fill a tractor trailer. Even on that scale, is baking brownies a job that people can build a career from?
You know, there's a lot of careers that you can develop in food manufacturing, and you learn a lot of skills. But we don't believe that everyone that comes to Grayston wants to be a baker for the rest of their career. So we certainly provide paths out of the bakery as well. But we want to give people the on-ramp to what a job could be.
Sometimes you got to look within yourself and look in the mirror and start doing sacrifices and stuff like that to get what you want to get. Things don't happen overnight. And that's how I was. I made sacrifices. 8 years later, I'm where I want to be.
How does Grayston address the very specific needs that people, especially returning citizens, have when it comes to struggling with finding affordable housing, childcare, medical care?
What you need to understand about open hiring is it starts with the job. But beyond that, we're trying to understand what the obstacles are that people have in being successful on the job. Because if I can't get product out the door, really, what am I trying to do? So the things you mentioned, which include housing, child care, hunger is a big one that we're exploring now. Hmm. Workforce development skills, mental skills, parental skills are things that occupy people, preventing them from being successful. So we do the best we can to overcome those obstacles.
How do you do that?
So we have relationships throughout our community in Southwest Yonkers where we provide additional services around childcare. In our particular situation, we own an early education facility. So we subsidize people's ability to go into early education. But what we believe for other business leaders is just make the connection with the early education providers in their community and ensure the people that are coming to work have their kids cared for. I've got access to incredible assets at the business. We've got technology. We're sophisticated, and we're able to solve problems that might otherwise become too challenging for people. So let's use my business assets to set up my team members to be thriving.
So is the philosophy this idea of, like, you make a contract with your workers, you invest in them, and then they invest back by doing their jobs to the best of their ability?
When I came home, nobody would give me the opportunity. So for Grayston to give me the opportunity, I'm loyal, and all my peers is loyal.
You know, it's an agreement that I need to get business done. My team members need to do what they're going to do, and I want to make sure I give them every opportunity to be successful. I also want to make sure I'm delivering on my promises to my customers.
I'm sure it's safe to say that it doesn't always work out perfectly, though, right?
No, it doesn't. Everybody doesn't make it, but I just strive to bring along as many as I can.
What about those who are concerned about other employees? Yeah, I would be willing to hire somebody, but, you know, my other employees, I got to protect them.
There's an opportunity for the visionary business leader to say, these new team members that would come through open hiring are not going to be problematic. They're actually going to raise the level of camaraderie and raise the level of quality culture within your organization. If I could add the one comment about, you know, Grayston, we provide jobs to everyone on our factory floor. What my challenge is to other business leaders is to find the one job within their organization, or the 2 or 1% that they previously thought were inconsequential, that could now become the basis of their social justice program, and they can build from there.
Mike Brady is CEO of Grayston Bakery in Yonkers, New York. Dion Drew is the bakery's supervisor of training. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was WHYY's Katie Culinary. Her interview is part of the Reentry Project, a citywide collaborative news initiative on the challenges facing people returning from prison and what can be done about them. You can read more about Grayston Bakery and open hiring in our partner, the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.